Hey, it's not April Fool's Day, right? That's long gone. I don't know if you saw this story. We have a Sacramento A story. So real quick, before we get back to the NBA. And I think this was CBS 13 had this story. A controversial figure from the A's recent history says he wants to be appointed the team's manager when they move to Sacramento.
No way.
Jose Canseco.
Oh, my gosh.
He started a petition Monday urging people to support his push to become the Sacramento A's manager.
Are you serious? Is this on The Onion or something like that?
I don't think so. He cited his career accomplishments with the A's and MLB. I mean, that's not how it works, Hosey, right? I mean, they have a manager.
And a petition? Like, what are you trying to get on the ballot somewhere or something? Like, who's just going to say, you know what? I bequeath you the position of manager of the Sacramento
A's. Mr. Fisher, here's a petition.
Right.
Mark Kotze, I'm sorry. Look at all these signatures. Right, I'm sorry. There's nothing 5, we can do.
5,000 signatures.
You're gone. Jose Canseco is our new manager.
That's awesome. You know what? He just needed to get back in the news. I'm not out there anymore. Let me get in the news now. So.
Yes.
All right.
So something to keep an eye on.
Jose Canseco. Would you welcome that, Sacramento? As Jose Canseco, your manager. Oh, my gosh.
Does anybody remember when he was phenomenal, even before all the home runs that he hit? I remember I saw him at like one of his first games and he got a 2-strike single off Tom Seaver. And I thought, this guy's the greatest player I've ever seen.
Oh my gosh.
You know? And he could do it all. And then, tragic tale.
Tragic. It went down quickly.
Yeah. He had some pop though, didn't he?
He did, man.
Yeah.
Bash Brothers back in the day.
Yeah.
A little handshake or whatever you call that. You know,
Yeah. Let's do your rant now.
I want to do this, because I forgot about this rant. I just was riffing, man, because this was after the loss to the Phoenix Suns. And I'm sitting there on the post-game show. I got Morgan Reagan to my left and Chelsea Gray, the great WNBA star. And they're talking about turnovers down the stretch. Domas got to be better. De'Aaron got to take the ball. Meanwhile, I'm sitting over there steaming, boiling at what I watched. The officiating was so bad that game, I just had to let it loose. So this is after the Phoenix Suns game.
One point loss by the Kings.
Heart-wrenching, gut-wrenching loss. Here was my reaction and my rant on the officiating.
The NBA has a problem right now, ladies and gentlemen. And we had Tim Kempton on the radio today. The physicality has gotten out of control. Ooh. It is not basketball that's being played right now in the NBA. It is bully ball out there. The NBA has gone too far the other way. Like, this is not fun to watch. Tim Kempton said it. And this is a guy that played in the 90s, played Bad Boys Pistons and all that. And for what I saw out there tonight, and it's not against Sacramento, it's not against Phoenix, it's against both teams. The NBA has to clean that up. I think there's too much physicality out there. And then to adjust to it middle of the season, I just don't like this brand of NBA basketball. It is not enjoyable to watch because so many times guys are getting fouled, they're throwing their hands up, rightfully so, and these refs are swallowing the whistle. They're so-called letting the players decide on the floor. Uh-uh. A foul is a foul is a foul. Make the calls, officials.
So,
and this is not about Kings didn't get the whistle. That's not basketball out there, guys.
Yes.
Go ahead, Whitey, because I'm still fired up listening to
the naysayers could say, he's just saying that because the Kings lost. But last night, your point was proven.
That's what I'm
saying. Two different playoff games.
And the passion that I'm coming from is because I love the league so much. It's not because sour grapes, the Kings lost, the Lakers lost, the Sixers lost. It's just I'm watching the players react to not getting the fouls called. And, you know, one of the things, as I'm calling the game, Whitey, I can see it. I'm up close. I'm like, well, maybe people at home can't see it. But then watching that Lakers game last night, watching that Sixers game, I'm like, no, people can. How can we be okay with the officiating right now in the NBA? Because, and here's the point, Whitey, it's so all over the place. It's so subjective. Like, it's going to screw up what should be a great NBA playoffs. We're going to be talking about the officials swallowing their whistles, marginal contact. It's too much gray area. Mm-hmm. I can't watch anymore, man. It's frustrating.
I told you, I have a friend who was an official in the league a long time ago, and he was telling me, I can't watch anymore. He said that somebody gets clobbered at one end, and it's not a foul, and just what we've been saying. So I don't know why the league is doing
this. But do you think fans have a problem with that, Whitey? And I would like to hear from people. 916-339-1140. Maybe it's just bitter old Drapes or bitter old Whitey upset about it. You know, if fans aren't upset, then I guess it's okay. Because when I saw last night, hell of a shot by Jamal Murray.
Yeah.
Great shots by the New York Knicks. Is that more important than actually getting the calls on the court right? Do fans care about the ending game winners more so than what happens the other 47 minutes? Because watching that last night, I just don't like it, man.
Yeah, it's, and it's personal preference. So
right.
I know sometimes people are like, well, I like it, but those guys will yell at me. It's okay. We want to know. We want to know how you're feeling, right? If you like this brand of basketball, we would like to hear from you. On the text line, we have from the 530, I agree completely. I cannot stand this new officiating. My question is, do you think the Kings finished with a better record this year if they kept the officiating the same post-All-Star break?
We've talked about this in a roundabout way. And I'm going to say no, because I feel like the Kings, from a defensive standpoint, adjusted to the physical. And it actually helped them out, right? And
it's no coincidence that their defensive numbers started taking off right after
when
the
they were able to get away with a little bit more. And so I don't think they would be a better team if it hadn't happened midway through. But I will say this. De'Aaron Fox should get to the line more. Domas should get to the line more. I don't know what I'm just exasperated with the NBA right now, man. And I love these guys. I love the artistry. I love the skill. I don't like the officials swallowing the whistles. Call a foul, a foul. That's it. That's all we're asking, Whitey. Mm-hmm, I'm not asking for anything.
From the 209 here, the person I would want the Kings to take a flyer on if Malik goes to Orlando is a sign and trade for Jonathan Isaac. That's just not how sign and trades work.
Yeah,
there's no reason for Orlando to do that.
Right. And why would they give you Jonathan Isaac?
Yeah, that's not how sign and trades work, where it's like, well, in order to give a guy the most money, you have to sign him, then trade him to us, and we'll give you something.
And it's not usually a valuable asset. Usually it's, you know, a second round pick. You know, it's not anything that of
bottom
value,
line is
really.
For Orlando, there is no reason for them to do that, because they can get Malik without giving
without
up
signing.
Isaac.
Why would they do that for you?
Yeah.
Exactly.
And they're otherwise, not letting, I'm all in. But
right,
it's just,
I would love Jonathan Isaac, but that's a pipe dream. That's not happening.
Yeah, 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. Just curious. Maybe some people are, it's like, I don't even notice that much of a difference. I don't know, but it was noticeable last night, and the two-minute report was littered with, in the Sixers game, it was just littered with non-calls, right?
Yes, non-calls. And then the league two-minute report came out with four calls in the final 2 minutes that the officials got wrong. And our boy Campio says, the game of basketball is a beautiful game of motion. And without proper calls, the game is football on hardwood. I agree 100%, Campio. And you got to look at it, too. The NBA over the last decade has been a finesse game. Now, all of a sudden, you're rewarding the teams who are being overly aggressive. Mm-hmm. And you've actually changed the fundamental way the game is being played now. Mm-hmm. It used to be finesse. And I told you last week, Whitey, at the beginning of the season, the league came out, its point of emphasis was freedom of movement for the offensive player. That's been thrown out the window. Like, you can grab, you can hold, you can wrestle. Like, it's Adam Silver, he's messed it up.
Yeah,
man.
But the bigger problem is that you can do all that sometimes. Like, you talked about the Bad Boys.
Yeah.
And one of the things that Bad Boys did, long story short, the Pistons, is they were a very physical team. The philosophy was, we were going to foul and foul and foul. They can't call all
everything.
The fouls. Therefore, the game's going to become more physical, because officials can't call a foul on every play. And that became the way that the game was played league-wide.
Yeah.
And the league did something about that. And now it's just, again, it's sometimes this is a foul, sometimes boop, is a foul. The inconsistency is maddening, and it also opens the door to, people look at that and go, Well, that's weird. That's suspicious. And that's the last thing the league needs. I'm not saying the fix is in. I'm saying it would be easy to look at that and go, wow, that looks suspicious. And that's bad for the league.
Yes. And it's not just us. It's also, Jay, you got LeBron James because, you know, and you started off the show saying this. LeBron went on an epic rant last night as well after that tough loss to Denver. And it's the one time we actually agree with LeBron James. Let's hear what LBJ had to say after last night's loss.
I don't understand what's going on in the replay center, to be honest. I think I said it this year or last year, whatever. D'Lo clearly gets hit in the face on a drive. What the f*** do we have a replay center if it's going to go? It doesn't make sense to me. It makes no sense to me. It bothers me. Sorry I didn't answer your question, but that is like. And then I just saw what happened with the Sixers-Knicks game, too. What are we doing?
I don't like to say it, but he's right. LeBron is right.
And, you know, is LeBron crying? Is he whining? You know, some people say, you know, you guys blew a 20-point lead. Shut up. But his point is right. What are we doing? The guy got hit in the face.
Yeah.
He got hit in the face. Just called a foul. And that made it worse. They reviewed it and overturned it. Uh-huh. I just don't get that. Gosh.
Manny, too legit. I have third person so far today to mention that Keon got pushed on the ground by Larry Nance. Wasn't cool at all. It's too physical. Yeah, we talked about that too.
Yeah.
Manny, too legit, because that's a great example of it. And, of course, after the Kings loss, we didn't want to make it sound like we were saying, that's why the Kings lost. But it's a great example now of how sometimes they will let anything go. Other times you literally can hit someone in the face, and that's
right.
Not a foul.
Right. And that's the problem with the league. And you mentioned earlier the betting, the gambling. The officials are having a direct impact on the game.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at it too, free throws are down. Fouls are down. These are all things that people bet on.
And that's by design.
Right. It's by design. But these are things these are prop bets you can wager on. And now, midway through the season, you got to adjust to this new rule, even from a player standpoint and from a betting standpoint as well. I just think this quote-unquote rollout that the NBA is doing, this new way of officiating, it's been handled all wrong.
Yeah, towards the end of the regular season, I wondered if they were going to allow that same type of officiating in the playoffs, because I thought if they do, wow, there are going to be some problems. And guess what? There already are some big problems after last night.
Yes, huge problems. And I used to always, you know, argue in favor of the NBA, best officials in the world. You know, how come we aren't complaining about NFL officials? Like, does the NFL have a gray area? Like, usually a hold is a hold is a hold. Usually,
PI
right?
is often.
PI you know, is the one. Most, yeah. I feel like the offensive player gets away with an awful lot.
Eagles receivers are really antsy. Yeah.
Those guys, those physical guys. Come on, A.J. Brown, you know. But no, there should not be gray areas when it comes to rules.
Mm-hmm. Yep. 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. We'll get back to the phones. The conversation continues, and we got to see what Drape's favorite, John Hollinger, has to say about the Kings' offseason plans next on Sacktown Sports. It's not a very optimistic view of the Kings' offseason, is it? We're slipping into darkness, Jay?
Yeah. Man, he's meaning the offseason. It's the offseason.
Well, the question here is, why is the NBA doing this, basically? Why is the NBA tarnishing its own product after some especially egregious non-calls and calls last night? Curtis Hicks on the YouTube chat says, he says, the physicality is welcomed as long as it's consistent. It's beyond inconsistent. And he mentions a play at the end of the third quarter. Ingram dislodged Fox from a leading guard position. And canned a bucket. Fox said they called it marginal contact. What a joke. Yes, that's right. The whole thing. Marginal contact. An official could say that about anything.
Anything. And that's our point, right? We don't know what's marginal to one person is different to another.
Uh-huh.
You know? And I just get frustrated because these officials, they go through training, they go through meetings and everything. And then it's just like, Okay, yeah, I guess that's marginal. Let me blow the whistle. Or I'm not, like,
if a guy getting hit in the face is deemed marginal, then, I mean, it seems to me we've crossed a line here. Right?
You're right. How is that marginal? The guy got hit in the face.
That's the guy that got hit in the face.
Marginal is like if somebody brushes up on you or something like
that. Yeah.
It's like getting tackled. Well, that was marginal contact.
There is no culture in the world in which getting hit in the face is marginal contact.
Stop it, Whitey. You're being a Lakers fan right now. That's what it is. That Lakers fan is coming out of you. No, yeah. I don't care if you're a Lakers fan, Kings fan, whatever. Like, you got to admit, that was a horrible call. And it occurred outside the 2 minutes, so you can't have that in the 2 minute report or anything like that. But I think Adam Silver needs to address the officiating going on right now.
Do you think he really watches basketball? I got to be careful.
What do you mean? What do you mean? Does he watch basketball? he watching reruns of Murder, She Wrote or something
PBS
like that?
PBS or something.
Come on. Yeah. We need to get Adam Silver on here and answer for this. Or get somebody from the officiating office, because it's ridiculous.
I'm sure he watches basketball.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think he does.
Will Born a Raider Laker. Will Born a Raider Laker says, roughing the passer is the worst. He says, what the hell is the rule? Can't even touch the quarterback.
Yeah, I don't like how they treat quarterbacks in the NFL either. Like, they're like fine pieces of china that you have to wear white gloves. They're football players.
Do you remember when it might have been... Well, I was going to say it was Brady. He was on New England still, and they were playing the Chiefs, and I think the AFC title game. And who was it? There was a pass rusher with the Chiefs that had a clean shot at him in the red zone, and he held up. Yeah,
right.
And they scored a touchdown.
Yes.
And it's like, because he's like, well, if I hit him, I'm going to get penalized. If I tackle the quarterback, I'm going to get penalized. That was years ago, but I'll never forget that play. Will Born a Raider Laker makes a good point there.
Well, the problem, too, is a lot of times – you have people making rules changes that haven't played the game. They don't have any idea what it's like to be in the heat of the moment. Case in point, being a defensive lineman pressuring the quarterback. It's not like you, as you go for the tackle, the player adjusts. You can adjust also when you're in the air. Like I feel like in the NFL, the defense is at such a disadvantage. Like, I feel like offensive pass interference can be called a whole lot more in the NFL. And so, I don't know, man. I'm just on one today.
Yeah. I think in the NFL, they've backed off that using the helmet as a weapon a little bit.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, all for player safety and wouldn't wish a concussion on anybody. But they went overboard there, where you'd see guys make football plays that they've made their whole lives and get penalized. And they'd be like, I tackled a guy the way I've been taught to tackle since I've been in Pop Warner. And now that's a penalty? What are we doing? Again, what are we doing? But they've backed off of that.
Is the officiating nowadays, whether football, basketball, whatever, is it worse today than when we were growing up back in the day?
Whether it is or not, it is. What I mean is, because we see everything. Yeah. Maybe it was terrible before, but it didn't matter. Everyone just kind of rolled with it.
Right.
Now we see every game, and it's bad. And I think it leads to officials choking, because they know people can see everything they're doing. And, you know, it's not just, do I make this call? If I make this call and I'm wrong, it's going to be a big story.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that can cloud their judgments, because they're, for the most part, human beings.
So the replays, the slow-mos, all of that has an effect on officiating, you think? Like,
I do.
The psyche of an official nowadays.
Yeah. I haven't done a study or anything, but yeah, I think so.
So let me ask you this. Because growing up, there were always referees that we knew talking about basketball. The Joey Crawfords of the world. The not necessarily Dick Bavetta, but, you know, he was a well-known one. Do you think officials, I'm talking NBA now, are more easily able to let stuff brush off their shoulders, you know, versus a guy like Dick, you know, Joey Crawford? You kind of knew when Joey Crawford had a game. Joey Crawford walked into a building and didn't like certain guys. Look at Scott Foster and CP3. That whole narrative nowadays, that, you know, those two not liking each other. I could argue back in the day, that was all the time. Like, there were certain officials that guys just didn't like, and vice versa. Do you think today's officials are better at just letting things slide?
My guess would be yes, because I can't think of a single official who has said, I can't do this anymore unless I'm missing somebody. You know how much abuse they have heaped on them by stuff we can't even imagine.
Right, right.
But I can't think of one who has said, I'm out, I can't do this anymore. Yeah. So they must be, on some level, they must be able to go, yeah, that's part of it.
Right. You know, it's interesting because you bring that up, and I was calling a game. It was the Sunday game against Portland, I think, and the referee was Tyler Ford. And he was getting rode hard. I mean, the crowd was on him, like people right behind me. Tyler, you suck. That was awful. And he came over, took a sip of his water, and he said, just another day at the office.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like they take some physical abuse. There was one high school game my son was playing, and we were out in El Dorado Hills, and I forget the team, and there was this woman referee, and she was getting blasted. I mean, she was getting blasted. Not just her, the whole crew. And I go to her afterwards, and I said, why do you do this job? Like, why do you, you know, like, what do you get out of this? She's like, well, other than a good paycheck and I like basketball. And I'm like, I don't know if that kind of abuse is worth it. Like, seriously. Like, yeah. Maybe at the NBA level, maybe because you make a little bit more. But at the youth level, when you got parents in the stands and stuff like that, I don't know if it's worth it.
According to this player poll in The Athletic, well, players were asked, what letter grade do you give the referee this season? The referees, what grade do you give them? A, 3%. B, 27.3%. C, 47.8%. D, 13.6%. And F, 8.3%. Mm. And the writers of this piece, I think Sam did this. All things considered, the report card could have been much worse for the refs. So you had 21.9% of the players polled indicating that the officiating job was below average this season, 78.1% giving a grade of average or better from the players. That, again, was 80-something players polled.
I guess, but I look at it another different way, Whitey. Scroll down for me. I'm looking at your screen right now, the other way. Go, I want to see the
poll.
Well,
I want to read this because voters who gave an F, one of them said, bleep, they don't know if they want us to play or not play. But leaving that, but they're good people.
But they're good people.
Yeah.
I was going to say 3-point-something% thinks they're perfect, outstanding, but more think it's they're like complete failures,
failures,
you know?
Yes, yes.
And so I think it's worse this year, man. I think it's worse than it's ever been. And the problem is I don't think the officials are bad. I think they've been put in a bad position by the league. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they've been put in this position by the league. It's not that they aren't seeing the fouls or whatever. They don't know whether to call them or not right now.
Yeah. Let's see. One voter who gave a C said the issue is there's too much volatility, but also the inconsistency. I would say there's 8 elite officials, great officials. Then you have the rest of the 50 that are just, you could carry them in. It makes it hard on those guys. There's 8 elite officials who are great at communicating and at officiating. And then there's 4 who can do one of each where they can either officiate or they can communicate. And the rest of them are just bad.
That's an anonymous player that
yes,
said that?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
That is, they are supposed to be the gatekeepers of your league, you know? Like that they're just keep the order, the law and order of your league. And mm-hmm. if they can't do a good job and you don't have faith in them, it's bad, man. And I'm looking at Chris the Mom on the text. I'm not a Lakers fan, but I was actually rooting for LeBron by game end. He deserved a win in my eyes. Think about it. The officiating is so bad.
We've
made LeBron James a sympathetic figure
turning
right now.
Fans
right?
into Laker fans. That's wrong.
That's when you know it's bad, man. That's sympathizing for LeBron. Wow.
Yeah. Brendan Nunes will shed light on this and other issues pertaining to the Kings when he joins us coming right up with the Drive Guys Sector. Drapes, who do you think would be less likely to get thrown out of a game for yelling at the officials during a basketball game? And I mean, you know, just to the point where like, sir, you're going to have to leave. Frankie Cardicelli or Brendan Nunes?
Who's less likely?
Less likely.
I'd say Frankie. He's like Mr. Rogers, man. He's too nice. Frankie's way too nice.
So you
Brendan got a little mean streak in him. He quiet guy, but he got a little spice to him. I know that.
All right. Is Brendan ready to go? Yeah. All right. We'll be joined by Brendan in just a moment as we boy, it's kind of sad, huh? Wrapping up the season with these insiders.
I know.
This end of the season thing is hitting hard this year.
It really is. It you know, and as I was driving here, it hit me, and I know I've said this, but the Kings did not make the playoffs. If you would have told us at the beginning of the year this Kings team would not make the playoffs, we'd laugh at it. We'd be like, no way. They did not make the playoffs. I still don't believe it, man.
One of our outstanding SacktownSports.com Kings insiders, Brendan Nunes. Brendan, I don't know if you heard there, but Drape said you would be more likely than Frankie to get thrown out of a game for heaping abuse at the officials. Do you agree? Are you more likely than Frankie to get ejected for that?
It depends the sport. If it's baseball, it's Frank. If it's basketball, it's definitely me.
Okay. See, I was right. Yeah,
yes, you are in basketball.
I'm definitely more of a talker than Frank, though, for sure.
How would you describe the overall mood and the tone of yesterday's end-of-the-season interviews with the players?
Yeah, I mean, a big conversation was definitely Malik Monk, and the tone around him was he deserves to get paid. And whatever that may mean, we'll see. Kind of TBD there, and obviously a big question on Sacramento's end, but that's pretty much everybody's messaging, is that this guy deserves to get paid. Malik was very self-reflective on kind of his journey. You know, he's mentioned it before of almost being out of the league, not having really anybody offer him anything until the Lakers came up at the end of his first free agency after his initial stint with Charlotte. That was really one of the main takeaways, and overall a disappointment with how their season ended, but also, you know, that it's sometimes you take a step backwards to take a step forward.
Brendan, you know, regarding Malik, you know, I wonder now, a few weeks ago, a couple of months ago, we had to re-sign Malik at all costs. Do we still feel that way right now, or is there a path towards, you know, improving with, even if Malik leaves, can they do some other things to improve this roster? Or this big offseason, it's all about Malik Monk?
I wouldn't say it's all about Malik Monk, but I think it's the team is better with Malik. And I think it is kind of as simple as that. You know, they will have their 13th best odds in this draft class. And that's its own conversation of, will they try to just have Atlanta take that pick, or would they try to trade it? But you have that to work with. You could potentially take a guy. You have the MLE to work with. It starts about 12 and a half million to play with. And ideally you're using that to bring in another complementary piece rather than having to spend that to replace Malik's production. You know, like Kevin was a big part of that as well, not being out there, but you saw how much the offense really struggled with Malik being sidelined for those last handful of games. So I struggle to see how this team would be better without Malik there. And they do have resources to improve outside of that, but I think ideally that both would exist.
Brendan, what does this roster need more than anything else?
Length and athleticism. I think that's really it, you know, and there are skills that come with that are important. I think that they put a really high priority on their offense and getting that back up to the production it was closer at last year. And, you know, ideally a guy that is fluid enough to be productive on defense. I kind of think that you've seen throughout the year Mike Brown compliment other teams that have a lot of length and athleticism. I think that's one of the problems that they ran into with New Orleans and losing to them six times in the year. So, I mean, I really think that they should go star hunting and then figure out the other pieces from there. But if it's not just some sort of star we're talking about, I really am looking at length and athleticism to get some more size and versatility on this team.
Well, give us some names then, Brendan. Yeah. You can't just throw that out there. Who are you looking at? Wish list?
This is going to be one of those Brendan Nunes pieces where here's some potential targets for the Kings. Who do we got?
You know, it's fair enough. If we're talking star hunting, all right, which is these are going to be pipe dreams. That's what it's going to sound like, right? Yeah. But things change very quick in the NBA. I love me Mikal Bridges if Jordy Fernandez wants to do any favors now. Or Lauri Markkanen is somebody that really interests me. Again, these are guys where you're going to have to offer a lot of draft picks and obviously matching salary of Kevin or Harrison, if not both in these. It wouldn't surprise me if Davion or Keon gets part of these conversations as well. You know, there's an interesting situation going on in Miami, I think, a little bit with Jimmy Butler potentially being owed an extension, and how could those conversations go if they fell apart? I think Jimmy's the type of dog that Sacramento could really benefit from. And if you didn't want to go in that direction and instead you were just trying to go with bringing Malik back in some MLEs, like free agents you could look at. I mean, we're always talking about how do they go get their KCP. KCP is a free agent. You know, there's
Come on, Brandon. KCP ain't taking no mid-level. Don't even – come on, bro.
You think he gets more than 12? Probably.
Yeah,
huh?
KCP about to get paid, bro. He's going to get like $20 million. Like, he's going to get – I would honestly, when you put him in the same category as Malik, as a guy, you're talking about an elite 3-and-D guy. He's about to get paid, I think.
You're right there. I think some other names, like, you know, you got to get a little complimentary, I think, kind of breaking up the MLE of do you go get like a Torrey Craig and a D'Anthony Melton? Is Royce O'Neal going to go back to Phoenix? You know, I think that Doug McDermott is a guy that shares the same agent as Kevin Huerter, has played with Domantas Sabonis before. So there's interesting options to go look, but a lot of what we're talking about, if you're not swinging for stars, is kind of some depth pieces. But I think that last game in New Orleans shows how important it is to have those guys.
How close is Keegan to being the player the Kings need him to be?
He's still a little ways, and I think that's fine. You know, I think the variance that we saw in those two playing games is very representative of where Keegan is at right now, where he still has those flashes where he can be the leading scorer in the entire game, where Steph Curry's on the other side and he's outscoring De'Aaron Fox because he gets hot for a stretch and is able to keep it up. And then he's a little hesitant against New Orleans. So I think that mindset is going to be a big thing for him. That was one of the, I think, silver linings to Malik and Kevin going down, was an increased aggression from Keegan Murray. But that's still got to get to another level. I think that he is going to take another jump, and they need him to next year. But from the point of, you know, if we're talking about this guy being an X factor of eventually flirting with, you know, getting out the second round, I still think that we're a little ways away, but I think that's fine. It's kind of how the process, I think, should be expected to be going.
Brendan, you know, I'm listening to you talk about Keegan, and I hear you. But then you also want to go star hunting. Do you think the belief is still that Keegan is that star and can be that star? Or are you looking to bring in a star and then move Keegan down the not depth chart, but maybe he's your third or fourth option instead of what we need as his him being your second option?
I think ideally it's sort of blending the timelines, right? That Keegan's still on this rookie deal and that you have another guy that you're able to bring in on a larger salary that you're able to stomach. And say he is a little older, let's roll with like the Jimmy Butler hypothetical, right? And you get a couple good years of Jimmy Butler to hold you over while Keegan continues to develop. And as Jimmy slows down, then Keegan starts to take more reins. So I think ideally both could kind of exist. And I definitely do still think that that belief of Keegan being an all-star remains like within the organization. I hesitate a little bit, you know, if we're talking about Tobias Harris, Chris Middleton type, like fringe all-stars, maybe he sneaks into one or two in his career, and that'd be a great outcome, don't get me wrong. But to what extent, I have questions, but I do think there's still belief that he reaches an all-star level.
Brendan Nunes, do you think Malik Monk will be back with the Kings in the fall?
I hope he is.
I know what you hope. We all hope it. What do you think, sir?
Yeah, I'm probably about a coin flip right now, fellas. I think the tone yesterday definitely has people walking away thinking, oh, man, this guy's going to get paid. It's interesting to me, though, looking at the market. Like Orlando, I mean, you guys probably seen it, too. You watch any of these Orlando games, they didn't put up 90 in either one of their games against Cleveland. Shoot. They're starting Gary Harris. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't tell me Malik Monk wouldn't be great right there, you know? But what do they prefer with their money? Do they want to go Malik Monk, or do they want to go a little more off-ball with a Klay Thompson, or D'Lo's playing really well, or DeMar DeRozan for a little more vet leadership? So I think there is a lot of dependence on there's a couple teams that are intriguing, and who do they prefer? So there's a lot of questions that lie there, but I think the 478 number that Sacramento can offer is about right. You know, Jordan Clarkson just got paid last offseason. He got a 228, about 14 a year. You know, this is a guy that was in a similar role to what Malik is now. And so it depends kind of how much further up you think he can go. But I think the 478 is enough to be competitive. It's just another one of these teams love him. And because that's so unpredictable right now. I kind of have it as a coin flip. I don't know if that's a cop-out answer here.
It is, but it's understandable. I mean, you're going through what we're all going through, right, Drapes? You can hear him, like, the two sides of Brendan talking.
Right.
Well, I think that's a good offer. Well, it sounds like he's not going to stay. We're all going through that, Brendan.
Yeah, I'm trying to talk myself into it, you know. I don't know. I do think that it's an okay number. I had thoughts previously of would it are we sure it takes the full 478? You know, Malik still does have a lot of inconsistencies, and I do think it does, but I really struggle to pinpoint, like, if this wasn't here, if they didn't have this limitation, what sort of number would we feel comfortable with Malik, and would we really want to get to 425? Now, if the other option is him walking, but it's a conversation.
Hey, Brendan, Sasha Vezenkov, do we know what he is or who he is and what his fit in the NBA is, or do we need to see more and give him some more time?
I still think that he deserves to get a little bit more time. You know, he only played 42 games this year, dealt with a lot of injuries. He had an ankle sprain early in the year. He comes back, re-injures that ankle, comes back from that at a practice, re-injures the initial ankle, and just only played 42 games this year. And there was the adjustment to the NBA. Now, ideally, in the minutes he did play, he would have been more productive, and I expected more production. I would bet that the Kings did as well. But all of those combined, I still think that he's deserves another year of kind of reserving judgment until we see him with an opportunity to get a little bit more of a flow. But at the same time, when you're going through your offseason decisions, I don't think that you should necessarily think about, we have Sasha Vezenkov. We don't need to go get this other guy. Mm.
Gotcha. B, thanks. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
When we come right back, is there anything extra the Kings can do to entice Malik to stay? And has a beloved King ever left as a free agent? We're back with that. Drive, guys. Sactown Sports. Do we have a theme today, Jay, or are you just playing what feels good?
Yeah, playing what feels good today.
Yeah. And Jay has really taken us to new levels with the music on the show. So sometimes, I don't know, sometimes it's like Jay's doing things like I don't even know what he's doing because he's playing chess, not musical checkers. You know, I was thinking about this offseason, how this one hits kind of hard. But you know, Jay, because you've been around here in town a long time, when you look at the roughest off seasons in Kings history, you know, the one, what was that, 2011, when it looked like they were going to leave, that obviously was very tough because remember the last home game and the announcers are crying and everyone thinks, man, the Kings are leaving. That was tough. This is nothing like that. But I also remember, would have been 2000, right? The Kings, they finally won. The Chris Webber Kings finally won a playoff series.
I know where you're going.
Then they beat Phoenix. They play the Lakers and get swept. And against the backdrop of that, you have Chris Webber is a free agent.
Yep.
And remember, we all thought, oh, I remember when they got swept that last game. I remember it. I mean, like Craig Sager was there. It tells you how long ago it was. Just Craig Sager. And they got swept, and it was like, there was like a pall over the whole thing because it was like, well, they lost to the Lakers again, and this could be it because if Webber leaves, the whole thing's done.
Yeah. It's going to all come crashing down. And we had seen, you know, I think most Kings fans had previewed what this really could be, and it actually turned into what, you know, we imagined. It just couldn't finish the product. But I'm with you. I remember that year. That had been my, sophomore year in high school. I remember that year hearing about, you know, we'll cut your grass, and we're going to put the signs up, and
the Maloose
with the billboards.
Uh-huh. Which Webb didn't care for, by the way.
No, he did not. You know, come here, and you'll eat forever. You know, you'll be able to drink forever. You'll come this way, you'll never have to pay. We'll bring you your groceries every week. You know, all these different things that people were, you know, coming up with creative ways to try to keep Webber here. And, you know, the fact that he signed it, all it really took was money. It was the money that kept him. And I think Webb, as he has said, and he said on this show, on this network, on this show, you know, plenty of times that there was something special being cooked in the pot that we got to see, you know, later on.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember that summer there was talk of maybe, you know, we were just talking about a sign and trade with Orlando. There was talk of a sign and trade with Indiana, and maybe the Kings would get a young kid by the name of Jermaine O'Neal. And I remember we'd go, well, I mean, that's something. It's not Weber, but it's something.
Sure.
And ultimately, I don't know if the offers weren't there or maybe the offers to go where he wanted to go weren't there, but he ended up, didn't they have?
Well, no, wait, hold on. Let's paint this picture a little bit better because you jumped on me. Weber just wanted to be here. Can we just say that?
You could say it. I mean, okay. Yeah.
Thank you. Let me feel better
about
it. I'm
sure that was part of it.
Okay. Yeah.
Didn't they have like a big press conference at the mall somewhere when they announced it? I think my wife and
don't
my kids,
remember that.
They were out shopping somewhere, and they was like, oh, yeah, Weber was there, and they announced that he's going to stay. Because when he decided he was going to stay, that was like, oh, thank goodness.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't remember. Do you remember what mall?
No.
Okay.
And, I could be imagining the whole thing.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe sure. I'm thinking of, do you remember when Kevin Martin signed and they had a big outdoor press conference and people were like, what? I mean, he's a nice player, but why
right.
are we doing this?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Weber signing took this city to new heights. And in hindsight, you know, again, we got to see what Weber and that Kings team meant. Because, I mean, you know, anytime they walk through the streets, they're the Beatles.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
But I, for everything that, you know, we kind of look and I'm not sure if you're going this way with the Malik Monk situation. You know, I've seen Carmichael Dave from the morning show. Carmichael Dave's getting a lot of run on our show. Let me say that.
I know.
Carmichael Dave talking about the morning show of, you know, what the fans here in Sacramento will do to keep Malik Monk. Like, all due respect to Malik Monk, that's not even close to the same level as when we were trying, you know, when Sacramento and
right.
was trying to keep Chris Weber here. And so,
yeah.
Man, it was sweet times. Let mm-hmm. me tell you.
Yeah.
Dope times. And I do remember the – you know, all the different things that came with it.
Yeah.
And the exhale that when Webb re-signed, people were like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said, it was a great period. It just didn't finish the way they wanted mm-hmm. it to.
Yeah, that was a team that was very capable of winning a championship. We were just talking, Drapes, about,
yeah.
you know, this offseason seems kind of, it's a rough one. But we were talking about the offseason where it looked like the Kings were leaving. We
yeah.
were talking about the offseason
yeah.
in 2000 where they got swept by the Lakers and yep. Webb was a free agent.
Yep. Yeah.
And, you know, that worked out. So compared to those, like, this is not.
This is not, yeah.
It's disappointing, but it's not like, oh, the whole thing's falling apart.
Right, and we all want Malik to come back. But let's keep it real. It's not like De'Aaron Fox is leaving or Domas, and you'd have to tear it down and rebuild or anything like that. And I mentioned yesterday, you know, there are guys out there who won't quite be Malik. But a guy like Gary Trent Jr. can mm-hmm. do a lot of the things Malik can do.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe as a fallback plan, it's not like, you know, you don't re-sign Malik and then all of a sudden you get zero back. Like, there are other moves you can make out there to help mitigate the loss of Malik.
I don't think a beloved King has ever left as a free agent. Because I'm thinking, you know, Webb got traded eventually. Peja got traded. Bobby got traded. Bibby got traded.
Yeah.
Flade left as a free agent, but it was right at the end.
At the end, yeah.
He barely got played. Traded. So I don't know that it's ever happened before.
I'm trying to think.
Yeah.
And even like.
I mean, a guy who.
Cousins,
I mean, you could say like.
Richmond.
John Barry was a favorite.
Rudy Gay
got traded.
Traded.
John Barry's the closest one I can think of. That's not even close. But that first year here, they signed him and Vernon Maxwell, hoping one of them would be good, and they were both good. And then I think he's like, well, you know, he had to go find a job that paid more money. So this would be unprecedented. My question is, do you know, is there anything that the Kings could do besides just the money? And I think Dave Lack on Twitter was talking about some of this. Do you know, Kyle? Maybe you don't know, but, I mean, could they – promise him a starting job. Could they? Is there anything they could do with option years? But that's all, as far as a contract, that's all limited, right?
Yeah, it's all, that stuff is all slotted.
Yeah, exactly.
It's you can't get creative or anything like that. You can, Jay, offer him a starting job, and this is something I thought about, but I don't know why you would do that from a coaching standpoint. Who knows? Monty McNair might go out there and trade for Devin Booker in a month.
Mm-hmm.
Then what? Oh, Malik, we promised you a start, but we got, you know, it's You can't
Booker
do that.
Because of those rumblings.
Right, those rumblings, right? Yeah. Out of Phoenix, Devin Booker, right?
What about this? And I've seen this. This was early on in the season. And this takes a lot of trust and loyalty from Malik Monk, his agent, family, friends, his circle. He could make a lot more money if he came here on a one-year deal, got the birds rights, the king, you know, the organization get the birds rights, and then next year, you know, the team blesses him with, you know, $100+ million, which then I think, and for me, listen, fellas, we all know this is a business, right?
Yes.
That's a lot of trust and loyalty. And I go back to the DeMarcus Cousins. One thing that he has talked about for quite a bit is he was promised the money from Vlade's regime. And, you know, in a matter of weeks, he was out of here. Mm. And so that's a lot of trust and loyalty and, you know, belief that they're going to bless you with that type of money. But
I think he's too smart to do that.
I think so, too. Yeah. And he hasn't been paid. You know, he really hasn't gotten his bag, fellas.
Yeah. Yesterday you were talking about how where the Kings are, they got to find like some gems, diamonds in the rough. And Malik kind of was that when they got
him. We didn't expect Malik to be the player. He had a nice year in L.A. that he was there, played well. But we didn't expect him to be, A, this good on the court, but also connect with the city the way he did. Mm-hmm. He became a fan favorite. And so, you know, who's that next guy that you can get that sort of does that? I mean, that's why Monty gets paid the big bucks. So if you don't get Malik, who's that next guy that nobody really knows about that could thrive here?
Malik Watch continues also when we come right back to the basic basketball question that the NBA must clarify for us, which is, what is a foul? With the Drive Guys on Sacktown Sportsnet.